Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
When MLB talent takes the field, reactions get loud.
Aaron Judge with a blast.
Oh, my God.
Whole scheme.
Struck him out with 102.
Laser beam.
Ohtani, inevitable.
Walk off, baby. This is the best.
Witness baseball greatness for yourself at the ballpark. Baseball is something else.
Yes.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm Emma Grede, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grede, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick 50 Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
It's hour number two here on WEEI Afternoons. It is Friday. It is July 4th. It's just after 3 p.m. Thanks so much for being with us here on WEEI. Dan Ball and John Lyons in for the guys here on this Friday, taking you up until 6 o'clock, coming off of a Boston Red Sox late morning victory. I will never quite get used to the whole late morning first pitch in Major League Baseball. It does feel very minor league, but the Red Sox certainly seem to enjoy it. Do you like a late morning first pitch?
So the Patriots Day game, I think, is cool, and I like that.
Yeah.
Other than that, not really.
Okay.
You know, there's those, I think it's the Sunday Roku games, like some
yes.
of those that are at 10 or 11 a.m.
The worst.
Yeah, and thankfully, I think the Red Sox only have one of those this year, maybe. So, like, I'm not a big fan of those. Today, though, it's kind of like Patriots Day. Again, obviously, special occasion in D.C., so the 11 a.m., that's cool. I don't like a regular 11 a.m. pitch, so I guess I can't ever live on the West Coast because I'd be dealing with that all the time.
Yeah, no kidding. The beginning of football Sunday would be a tough one to stomach. You'd start with your coffee in the morning. But we're with you up until 6 here on WEEI Afternoons, and our studio is powered by Verizon. We also got David Azer back behind the glass, and the three of us will present to you our three-point stances.
319!
180!
319!
318!
Yeah, there you go!
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pastrnak! A hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Quick little behind the scenes. David goes, "Oh, am I introing this?" And I respond back, "Do you want to?" And just a vehement shake of the head. No, God, no.
No, not
I would
really.
rather do anything other than tell you that the three-point stance is brought to you on most days by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. As it is 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, there are currently three people in this building, each of which will present their stance on the biggest stories in the world of sports today. Each host will get 60 seconds to present their opening stance, after which we will open up for discussion. Our order for today is myself, Dan Ball, then John Lyons, then our guy David Azer. I will lead us off. David, may I have 60 seconds on the clock?
You are good to go.
All right. Well, today I am going, as you do in the middle of July, to the ice for my three-point stance. We're going to talk about the Boston Bruins later. We're going to complain about the Boston Bruins later. We're going to mention how, you know, all good championship teams have three fourth lines and multiple third pairings on defense, which is what Don Sweeney and company have been creating. This roster is currently expanded or currently constructed, in my estimation, as a bottom five team in hockey. They have some top-end talent, I mean, one or two top-end talent players, but they have a lot of depth and a lot of guys that will hit a lot but not score. But I am holding on to one glimmer of hope, and that is who will be going first overall in the NHL draft next year, as the Bruins seem like they may have a chance for that pick. Allow me to introduce you to 17-year-old out of Canada, Gavin McKenna. Last year with the Medicine Hat Tigers in the WHL, he had 129 points in 56 games. It looks like he's going to be playing college hockey this year. He's down to Penn State and a couple of teams. So even though this year's Bruins may stink, the NHL may benefit from having a major market team get Gavin McKenna, and I wouldn't be overly surprised to see the Bruins in the mix for the number one overall pick and a generational talent in next year's NHL draft. So that was very negative, but I do see some potential. It's not like a draft that we saw, John, this year, where there are a lot of very good players. I'm very happy with Hagans, but this kid's legit, and I would love to see him on the Bruins in a year's time.
Yeah, and I think it's something that if they can get a number one or two pick, it's tough to screw those up.
Yes.
So shout out to the Bruins front office. And it actually, and look, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I'm an expert on this. It does feel like, though, they had a good draft this year.
Yes.
And I'm a big Hagans guy, but it feels like top to bottom, they went with guys that are just good hockey players, not the 6'6", 215-pound right wing they seem to pick every single year for the last 5 years.
Right.
So it hopefully that is a step in the right direction for them, but I don't know. There's still, we're going to talk about it later. There's just so many questions around this team.
Many more questions than answers. The kid that they picked in the fourth round from the Czech, it was on nobody's draft board. Elite Prospects had 350 draft prospects, and he was not one of them. But in development camp, people were commenting on the fact that he looked good. So PJ Axelson might have
checkers.
That's right.
Yeah.
Might have found something. All right, John Lyons, are you ready?
First time doing the three-point stance. Yeah. I'm ready to go, Dan.
All right, David, let's give him 60 seconds, which start right now.
All right, first time doing the three-point stance. I'm sitting here for Ted Johnson, who I met for the first time the other night. Nice guy. Nothing to do with my three-point stance, by the way. I'm just filling some time. Because my three-point stance is about the biggest story of this year, and we're going to get to the year in review in a bit. It's about Jason Tatum and the Boston Celtics, right? This is a team that we were hopeful was going to repeat as champs. They get down 3-1 as they're in the process of going down 3-1. He obviously tears his Achilles. And that's been hanging over the Celtics in the city of Boston ever since. And I think the assumption around everyone in Boston has been, he's going to be out all year. You're going to punt on this year. I am increasingly believing, Dan, there's a real chance he comes back in March and you're an actual contender. It would be 10 months after his speed bridge surgery, which is not out of the question. Kobe came back in 9 months. Tatum also had the surgery done the day after he got injured, which is better for recoveries. I believe in Tatum's work ethic and his ability to attack that rehab better than, say, DeMarcus Cousins when he had his. So I think he is going to be able to come back in 10 months, and the Celtics just might be contenders then. And we had Kevin O'Connor on yesterday, and he gave us a nice scenario where that could happen.
Okay. All right. Well, well done. As the horn was coming up, my loud voice will act as that instead. Well done for your first 3-point stance. I want to get into that, as is often mentioned in this segment. I have thoughts and questions, so we'll do that in just a few moments' time. But I get to ask my man David Azar, host of the Entering Ken Moore podcast about the Boston Red Sox. Episode 24 is now live. Yes, I did just see that on Twitter. Are you ready, David?
I am. This is also my first 3-point stance, so I am ready to go. I'll start the clock for myself here.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. So there's been a lot of questions about whether or not the Red Sox will be buyers or sellers at this trade deadline. To me, I think that starts with Aroldis Chapman, their closer, who is in a bit of a career resurgence type of year here. We mention it all the time. The Red Sox are in a ton of one-run ball games, and without Chapman, I think they would have lost a bunch more of those. We're talking about how he's a hot commodity at the trade deadline, but I'm going to go on the other end. I think the Red Sox should keep him, not only keep him, but extend him for a couple years. He's 37 years old right now. He's having one of the best seasons of his career. Could we see the Red Sox sign him to a 1 to 2 year extension on cheap money? I would love to see that. You talk about World Series champions, especially with the Red Sox. They always have good closers. Keith Foulke, Jonathan Papelbon, Koji, Craig Kimbrell, although Chris Sale ended up closing out that World Series. But I am here for Aroldis Chapman, and I want to see him in a Red Sox uniform for a couple more years. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
There you go. That is David Azar's debut on the 3-point stance. You guys are still working on your timing. I can tell it's a little 15-second buzzer there with the buzzer at the end, and there it is. But well done across the board. And, David, it's an interesting point because I absolutely, and I think this is kind of what you're alluding to, I for sure see a world where the Red Sox can still say that they bought at the trade deadline. They added that starting pitcher. They added a power bat. They added a first baseman. All the stuff that John listed out. But I could also see them doing the buy and sell strategy where they sell extremely high on this guy as a commodity. But if you are going to be a championship team, and this is something that you teed up listing those names, I don't know if I've ever seen a championship team without a good closer at the back end of the bullpen, a guy who you can trust, a guy who's just the perfect kind of psychopath that you need to be as a closer. I love closers. I think they're one of the more fascinating positions in baseball, John. And so where do you land on the Aroldis Chapman discussion?
I think if you trade Aroldis Chapman, you are telling everyone you're not serious about winning this year.
Okay.
Because he's been, Crochet's been your best overall pitcher. Chapman's been your second best pitcher. Starter or reliever, obviously your best reliever, and it's a valuable position, as you mentioned, at closer. So I think if you trade Chapman, a guy who I think should be an all-star at closer, who's won a championship before, that's just telling us you're not serious about winning. Because even if you trade Chapman and you improve your lineup, then who's going to be your closer? I mean, is it going to be Greg Weissert, who's already has the most appearances in the AL this year and looks kind of worn out already? Like, who's going to be your, is it going to be Zach Kelly, who's injured? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't have an answer. If you trade Chapman, to me, that's saying you're not serious about winning.
100%. And David, I want you to be able to weigh in on this as well. But to your point, John, it very much is taking the bottom card out of the house of cards that is your bullpen right now. Because if you pull Chapman out of that ninth inning spot, you do not have Slayton. You do not have Kelly. Weissert looks like he is one more blow-up appearance away from going on the injured list himself. Justin Wilson is also, you know, he's on the wrong side of 30 as well. Whitlock has been better, but we've seen what happens when you screw around with him too much and move him along the pitching
depth chart. And I think Whitlock's a guy, you want him as that key spot inning or two reliever. Like,
yes.
I think he's a weapon
when
you can use him that way. I don't think you want to pigeonhole him into being just your ninth inning closer.
David, could you see them adding to the bullpen? Where is the bullpen in terms of the needs of this team entering a hypothetical trade deadline where they are buying?
Well, heading into this season, it always felt like they were sort of an arm short. They signed Justin Wilson. That was their first move. And you were sort of waiting on Soto and everything else where they signed Aroldis Chapman early on as well.
Right.
And then all offseason you were waiting. It's like, okay, bring in Chapman, you bring in Wilson, but it still felt like they were an arm short. Now they're even more than an arm short, I would argue, because Weissert is clearly feeling the usage, and also Zach Kelly is not very good. You have Garrett Whitlock.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, right. And Slayton has been on the shelf for upwards of a month now.
And he's barely, like, he only started, what, playing catch last week?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So who knows what his timeline is to return. So it does feel like this could be a case where, can you bring in maybe a high-leverage arm? They did bring in Jordan Hicks in the Rafael Devers trade. I still don't think that's enough to get them through the rest of this season, though.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You have Hicks now, you have Alcala and Chapman. Amazing, all of a sudden now you have three guys that are throwing 100 out of the Red Sox bullpen when it seemed like they could never find those guys. But you listed middle of the order bat, and you listed probably a second or third starter at the deadline. Do you see that as an area where they would need to add, or are you comfortable enough with where they sit there?
Oh, I think they need to add. If they're going to be a real playoff team, that's what they need to add. And it's tough because you're not going to go out at the trade deadline and get an ace, right? But can you get a legit number two starter that Crochet can win you the first game of a playoff series and you feel good about game two? And I think going into the year, at least myself, a lot of us were hopeful that would be Tanner Houck, who before the All-Star game last year looked like a borderline Cy Young candidate. Can he, coming back from injury, figure out whatever was wrong and be that guy? That would be great, but I don't want to rely on that, right? Like, I'd much rather Houck be my third guy, or really my fourth guy with how Bello has pitched lately.
Yeah.
So I would want to add there, yeah.
Text line brings up something that I guess we can say the quiet part out loud. Where have you guys fallen? And David, I want to ask you, because you brought up Aroldis Chapman, where have you come to on the personal side of things for Chapman? He is a guy who comes with his fair share of baggage. He's had his issues. Everything that you hear about him as a teammate, guys seem to love being around him and having him a part of the clubhouse, but you can't look past that stuff. So the texter specifically says, I would get rid of him for a bag of chips because of, you know, the stuff that he did off the field. it's been kind of tough to reconcile, I think, for a lot of fans. But where have you kind of fallen on that throughout the year?
Right. So obviously he did a terrible thing and he will never be able to recover that in my eyes and a ton of fans' eyes.
Yeah.
But you look at it from the Red Sox point of view and they clearly don't care. They brought him in. They kind of tried to sweep it under the rug. It was pretty early on in free agency, but it's pretty clear at this point it doesn't really mean a whole lot to them, and that's a whole different discussion,
yeah,
whether or not that should matter more to Major League Baseball teams, NFL teams, whatever have you. But where they're at now, it seems like they're invested in him. I don't see them moving him at the deadline, and they already committed money to him this year. I don't see why they wouldn't extend him if they wanted to.
Is a Chapman trade, you talked about saying that you're unserious about winning. Is that the biggest white flag that they could raise at this year's deadline?
I think the biggest white flag would be if they traded Bregman.
Okay.
Especially
That's
after
where I would
Devers.
Land on that too, yeah,
especially after Devers. You talk about extensions. Bregman should be the guy that gets an extension. As long as he comes back and looks healthy, he's the guy that should get an extension. So that would be the biggest white flag. Also, I wouldn't trade any of the outfielders either. I don't know
any of the outfielders?
Yeah, I wouldn't trade any of them. I don't
really?
Know. Yeah, because, well, the way I look at it is Duran last year was a top 20 player in the major leagues, right?
For sure.
Led the MLB in doubles, triples, all-star game MVP. He hasn't been that guy this year, right? Hitting 253. But I still want to give him a few more months, especially after the all-star break. Can he kind of get back to what he was? Even if he can get kind of in between where he is now to where he was last year, your lineup will be a lot better. Abreu, to me, won the Gold Glove as a rookie last year. I think he's been much better since he came off the IL as well this year. That, to me, is a guy I kind of want to build around. That guy. Like, he's not my number one core piece, but I want him long-term here. Roman Anthony, you're obviously not trading. So then it comes down to Rafaela, and he's been one of the best defensive players in the major leagues, right? I mean, what's he? I think you said earlier, second and outs above average for a center fielder. So.
Yeah.
He's one of the best defensive players. His offense has been improving. And if, Dan, worst case scenario, your starting outfield is Anthony, Duran, and Abreu, and you have Rafaela as a super utility player, that's what the Red Sox should want. Like, that's the only exception is if you get a legit frontline starter for Rafaela. Like, if you can trade Rafaela and you're telling me it's part of a package to get Dylan Cease,
yeah,
fine. But otherwise, I'm not trading any of them.
So, where have you fallen then on the conversation around Duran? Because he's a very polarizing player.
Yeah.
Some people are, I would never trade him if you offered me Shohei Ohtani. Some people are, I would drive him to Logan right now. And it's just an interesting conversation that pops up because you do have right now four guys for three spots, and you do need to get Anthony into the outfield, ideally in left field sooner rather than later, just based on how his range has profiled out. But he's done a fine job when he's been out there in right field. So you're not entertaining those conversations for Duran at this point.
No, and the way I look at Duran, I mentioned last year, top 20 player in the major leagues. He turns 29 in a couple months, so he's still got, I think, several good years left. It's just a matter of, if you can't get him to what he was last year, can you get him, like I said, in between what he was? So
right.
Instead of hitting 255, can you get him to 270?
Right.
And I think that would be a big difference. And he's a guy, too, I think his speed is also important, right? Like, that's another, like, David Hamilton, love you, mean it. His speed is awesome. Can't do anything else. Duran's a guy that can do a lot of things, and he has that speed element, right? So I think that is another piece too.
And something that,
so I wouldn't deal him, no, unless it's for a frontline starter.
To your point, something that Lou Maloney brought up too when this originally started to float, and this was months ago, is you're already such a young team. You already have a bunch of first and second year guys. I know Duran is relatively young from a service time perspective, but he really is becoming one of your veterans. And
yeah,
kind
this
of
is
one
what,
of
his fourth year in the league, right? 22 he came up.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he's a vet.
He's
yeah.
a vet. And it's really his third season where he's been Jaron Duran, where he's been an established everyday player. He's the, you know, the wild child doing everything that he does. So he's just a fascinating case. And the one thing that concerns me about the trade, and I'd pick up the phone and listen on him, but He faces so much pressure playing in Boston. You and I know, we're sitting here talking about him right now. Everybody microanalyzes every single thing that Jaron Duran does, and nobody does it more than Duran himself. He's been very open about how much he beats himself up for whatever goes wrong in a given game. I think there's almost no way that you win a Jaron Duran trade, because I could see him going to a smaller market where there's less attention, there's less pressure, and he's able to just kind of do his thing and not be in a vacuum as much, I could see him blossoming and being much more like his 2024 self with a team that doesn't bring as much of the added pressure that playing for the Red Sox does.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Like, I could see him definitely being a guy that goes somewhere else and is great.
Yeah.
And even another big market, just somewhere else for a start, and he's great. But that's also why I would want to hang on to this guy, because does a fresh start coming out of the All-Star break, does he get back on track to what he was last year? Or maybe even this year, if it's just a down year, I would still want to give him into next year. And then, hey, if next year he's down again, fine. You want to talk about moving on? But there's just so much talent there, and we've seen it last year and parts of this year. There's been moments. I want to give that a little bit more time to come together.
All right, so let's put a pin in your point about Jason Tatum. We'll bring up the Celtics at large in the 4 o'clock hour, discuss the idea of Dame Lillard and all the different moving pieces that they have, as they still very much cling to a spot within that Eastern Conference playoff picture. But where it will be, we will certainly find out. That is our 3-point stance for today here on WEEI Afternoons. Again, Andy, Fitzy, and Ted are off today. The guys are back on Monday. It's Dan Ball. It's John Lyons with you up until 6 o'clock here on WEEI. And it's David Azar who's going to get you caught up on what's trending.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team, rep your city, rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
I told David, I said, don't worry about a clip or anything. Just come back with a banger. And he delivered. I feel like I'm driving around in Grand Theft Auto 5 right now. It's just, you know,
San Andreas. That's love right. That game. I liked how in Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, if you really break it down, all the characters were like based off some West Coast rap icon.
Yes.
Like they really were. So I love that.
Yeah.
You're going to get the new Grand Theft Auto, by the way? It was supposed to be out in 2025.
I mean, are they going to, I don't know. Are they going to give me one to get?
Yeah. I'm not really a big Grand Theft Auto guy. I played Grand Theft Auto 5. I played San Andreas, yeah. But I'm not one of those like hugely into it people. But
okay.
The trailer for 6 looked pretty cool.
I know.
Like in Miami. I know it's not really called Miami.
I mean, if it's
going
to take them 20 years to make it, they might as well make a cool trailer.
I guess so. Because it was supposed to come out, what, like 4 months ago or 5 months ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm.
But you know what comes out next week?
The new college football game.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, let's go.
I already
go.
Got my pre-order.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Xbox or PlayStation?
Xbox.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Going to have to play as UNC immediately. Yeah. Shout out Bill. Yeah.
There's the video game.
That's
Bill.
Why I pre-ordered.
Actually, did he give his likeness to that? Because he never gave him to the Madden games.
He was always any coach. I know. I don't know, to be honest with you. I want to see if he's in the game.
There's no way.
I guarantee you I'm downloading that game and I immediately play against North Carolina.
There's going to be a ton of people in this because, you know, college football is a bit spotty in this area compared to when you go down south or Midwest or what have you. But there are going to be a lot of people who are going to follow that and may not have necessarily wanted to buy the game before. But, well, I got to see if Bill's there, if it's just, UNC coach, or if it's a woman in her mid-20s wearing the headset on the sideline.
That
at
would be a nice little troll job by EA.
We're back here on WEEI Afternoons after that tangent. I am getting GTA 6, by the way. But 617-779-7937. We were hoping that was going to be one of the things of the first half of 2025, the GTA 6 release. It was not. But in lieu of that, we had a number of fascinating storylines that came. As John, we've now reached the halfway point of 2025. I would argue that Boston sports were in a far better place on January 1st, 2025, than they are right now. As a whole, before we go team to team, Would you say it's better, worse, or kind of roughly the same 6 months later?
I would say it's roughly the same because I think the Patriots are in a much better place, but I think the Celtics, who were the defending champs at that time, they're in a worse place. I think the Red Sox are essentially in the same place.
Right.
The Bruins are in a worse place, obviously. So I think it's about the same because of the upgrade the Patriots made, but it's definitely not any better.
I was trying to put myself in the shoes of January 1st, 2025, Dan Ball. Where was I on the Boston Red Sox specifically?
Well, that was, what, 2 weeks after they got Crochet?
Right.
They didn't have Bregman yet, but it was like 2 weeks after they got Crochet, so.
Right. And, I mean, I feel like at that point, I was doing the same thing that we do every single season in this era of Red Sox baseball, which was trying to convince myself that they're going to be a good team and that this year is going to be different than the last few. So you're right. From a true just record-to-record perspective, they are perpetually at 500. So let's go team to team, and let's start with the New England Patriots because they have been a ray of sunshine and a bit of optimism right now, as the other three teams have been largely disappointing. So the main characters in the first half of 2025 for the New England Patriots have been who?
It started with Gerard Mayo winning a game everyone wanted him to lose, let's not forget, and getting fired that night.
Yikes.
And it's become, really, Mike Vrabel and Will Campbell by extension. I mean, how many shows did we do in February, March, and April about Will Campbell and his arms?
Yep.
Like, how many segments?
Countless.
You notice, too, that we haven't really done those in, like, a month or so.
Well, that's the thing, because that's a pre-draft. That was our excuse for not drafting him at the time. Yeah,
you know what's going to happen. He's going to give up one sack in a practice on July 29th
yep.
and get a whole segment on arms. It's
absolutely.
Yes. But I think, to me, that's been the story here, because if you look at the Patriots and where they're at, three head coaches now in 3 years, two seasons where you combine to win eight games. They're in a really bad place at the start of this year. Now with Vrabel, and obviously I mentioned Will Campbell, but you add Milton Williams to the biggest contract in team history. You add Carlton Davis. You add Robert Spillane. It's the second year of Drake May. Maybe there's some hope there. Travion Henderson as well. And I think for the first time in a couple years, people feel at least pretty good about the Patriots. I don't think anybody is going to fool themselves into thinking this is a Super Bowl team or even a deep playoff run team.
I heard 13 wins floating around somewhere.
Yeah,
I won't mention Taylor Kyles by name, but I heard it somewhere.
A lot of respect for him. Enjoy doing shows with him. Couldn't disagree
100%.
But I think at the very least, it's a team where we could be talking about 9 wins, and that's in the reason. Whereas, again, 8 wins total in the last 2 years. And I think the last time, Dan, that I felt some optimism going into a season, and I was dead wrong, by the way, was in the summer of 2023, because I looked at it and I said, hey, they won 8 games with Matt Patricia as OC. They brought in Bill O'Brien. They'll be a little bit better. Obviously, the bottom fell out and they lost a bunch of one-possession games that year. Bill gets fired. The Mayo experience is a disaster. He gets fired. But now you have Vrabel. You have some of these young guys. I think, to me, the main characters have been Vrabel and Campbell, but you do feel better about them than you did in January.
Yeah, you have to. And you have to feel for the first time in a couple of years, I can see what your plan is. Because
That's a good point.
Last year, clearly their only plan was we just need to be the most anti-Bill Belichick coaching staff,
100%.
Culture, locker room, veterans, leaders in that we can possibly be. And unfortunately, that is the absence of a plan. That is not a plan. And that's why it was a 4-win season and a mess and an extreme lack of accountability and all the different things that are going to go with Gerard Mayo to his football grave. Now, whether or not it leads to 7 wins and, improved morale and closer games and hard fought, maybe lower scoring games, or if it leads to 9 or 10 wins, the emergence of your next franchise quarterback, the great return of Josh McDaniels to where he should have been this entire time. Regardless, it's almost a guarantee that you're taking a step in the direction A, and B, you have a plan for the long term that should lead to more sustained competition and success and contention for playoff spots. And that is certainly not something that we can say 6 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, the last time they were in the playoffs was 2021. The last time they even challenged for a playoff spot was 2022, where they were in it the last game of the season and gave up 2 kick returns for touchdowns to lose to the Bills, right?
Yikes.
So it's been a while, right, Dan? It's been a while
since
they've even challenged for a playoff spot. So I think for them to be there, that to me, of the four teams, that's the one to feel. I still think maybe you could talk yourself into feeling better about the Celtics going forward, but that's probably the team right now, today on July 4th, you feel best about.
Okay, so let's do just that. The first half of 2025 for the Boston Celtics. Where were you in January when they were kind of going through their rut of win a couple, lose a couple, 500 ball, you know, third, fourth seed in the Eastern Conference? Because that's when I first got here and started working with you, was when they were kind of in that frustrating rut of mediocre ball. And then they took off and got to where they did in the regular season. But first half of January up until now, where do you stand on them?
So I remember in January, I thought that they were going to repeat as champions, but mm-hmm. they were going to have a tougher road there. Like last year, they went 16-3, and they were dominant. But in addition to them being dominant, obviously Jimmy Butler got hurt, and I think they got Donovan Mitchell and Tyrese Halliburton to quit. But those guys did miss the end of those series. So I thought they were going to repeat, but it was going to be tough, right? It was going to be a deep series against Indiana. It was going to be a deep series against OKC, but they were going to eventually win. Then you get to, and you look at how well they played in March, right? In April, it felt all right. They're on it.
Yeah.
And they get through that Orlando series, who I think is a really good team, by the way. They get through that series in five games, and then game one, they blow the 20-point lead to the Knicks. And I was angry, and I had a little bit of a bad feeling, but Dan, I didn't really get the really bad feeling until game two. Because when I was like, well, okay, you did this twice at home, because you can rationalize and you can say, hey, they came off a physical Orlando series. They had a 20-point lead in game one. They just, you know, didn't play well at the end and they blew it. Right?
Right. Okay. Right.
You lost in overtime. Like,
maybe they took them a little lightly. You kind of blew the doors off of them.
You dominated
the
Knicks
season.
All year.
Yeah.
Right? You beat them four. Oh, and I will say, you beat them four times, but it was closer each time. But still, you beat them all four times. So I thought, okay, they had a bad night. It's embarrassing, but you know what? They can bounce back and win game two. They can win game three. They can win this series in five or six games.
Surely they'll be able to tighten up that late game, those late game details that they
lost. And then when they did it again,
yeah.
And I'm like, wow, they've done this twice, and Porzingis can't breathe. I was like, okay, they are in trouble.
Yes.
Right? And even then, there was a part of me that was like, well, they can still win this series in seven games. And then they dominate in game three. And then game four, the season falls apart, where not only does Tatum tear his Achilles, they were well on their way to losing that game before he did.
Well, yeah, well before it, for sure.
Right. But now you have this cloud hanging over them of Porzingis is traded, Holiday's traded, Tatum's out. They're still a playoff team with Brown, White, Pritchard, Hauser, but they're not the back-to-back title favorite that they were before. So they're in a worse place now, and it's more of a gut punch disappointment place, because I still look at them and say, their playoff team next year, and the year after that, they can win the championship again. So it's not like all is lost, but it's that missed opportunity of you had a real chance to win back-to-back, and now not only did you not win back-to-back, it messed up your upcoming season as well.
So let me ask you just a revisionist history question, and we can continue this on the other side, because we still have two other teams to get to in this. If Jason Tatum doesn't sustain that injury, but they still end up losing that series, what kind of conversation do you think we're having about the Boston Celtics right now? Is it the same, hey, we're trying to reload, get under the apron, but still go after a title? What kind of conversations do those look like?
So I think you would have seen one of Porzingis and Holiday get traded, but not both.
Okay.
I think his injury, and I know I said in my three-point stance, I think there's a chance he could come back.
Yeah.
But it's still more likely he doesn't. And even with that chance, that's why I think you trade both, and you get under that second apron. Now they're briefly over it again, but I think they're going to end up under it. They might even end up under the first apron. Whereas if he's healthy, then I think maybe you would look back and say, hey, Porzingis was hurt. Holiday wasn't fully himself. A lot of guys played in the Olympics, and you had a lot of basketball. You could rationalize that out and say, hey, it's a disappointment. Hey, they choked against the Knicks, but it's not like 2023 where we have to blow things up and make big changes.
Right.
We can be back.
Right.
Whereas with Tatum out, that's why I think you see both of them get traded.
It almost gave you a unique opportunity to do something that you were probably going to have to do at some point anyways, because, you know, Holiday was going down the wrong side of 30. Still a very useful player, but age is age, and those are a lot of hard miles.
And he wasn't quite as good as he was the year before.
Right. So
but I don't want to be one of those people who, now that he's traded, like, oh, he wasn't good anymore. Like, he was still good.
Of course he was.
But you did start to see some drop-off.
Yeah, there were some diminishing returns. It's just, and when you play, you know, 20 playoff games on top of playing 70 regular season games, and you're playing against the best team in the world against very good teams, You're gonna see that with a guy of his age. So between him and then Porzingis, with the money you were paying compared to what you were getting back, those were going to happen at any point.
Yeah, and
so,
I think as soon as Holiday signed that extension last year, I had this conversation with Justin Turpin, and he said it at the time, and we talked about it. That contract almost signaled that they were going to move on from him in 2 years.
Okay,
and that
yeah.
You could trade the back half of that contract, and maybe you wouldn't get a huge return, but at least it was a big contract, but not so big that you couldn't trade it. And we felt that that was, even a year ago, Holiday was going to be the guy out. I think the Tatum injury also opened the door for Porzingis to go, and Horford not to come back.
Okay, so we have the Red Sox and the Bruins that are still on the table. First half of the season, or first half of the year in Boston sports, I should say, has come and gone. The Patriots, their arrow is pointing upward. The Celtics, their arrow was pointing downwards, but the difference between January to May and then May to June changed the conversation dramatically for the Boston Celtics. The Red Sox, the Bruins, they are on the table when we return here on WEEI Afternoons.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Back here on WEEI Afternoons, we are midway through our Boston sports first half of the year in review. And you can join the conversation at 617-779-7937 as we recap where each of the Boston sports teams are from January 1st up until now. Results-wise, we've talked a bunch about the Boston Red Sox today, so we can kind of breeze through this here, John. Results-wise, nothing much has changed for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I would qualify it as a little bit. I said they're about the same place as last year, and yeah, it's been a little bit more disappointing because they came into the year with Crochet, with Bregman, with Chapman. I thought this would be a much better team than last year, and they're basically worse off. I mean, they're about the same. They're a little worse off than they were last year. So that to me has been they've been more of a disappointment. I don't think it's been the disappointment level we'll get to with the Bruins, but it has been disappointing.
It has, because there was an excitement factor in January and February when you did finally add those known quantities, or what you thought was going to be known quantities, and that is the excitement behind Crochet. Bregman was the most known quantity that you acquired, but even a guy like Walker Buehler, who you wondered at the time with the 7-8 pitches that he deploys, even though he's not humming 98, 99 miles an hour with his fastball anymore, I hand up accountability, fell for what can Walker Buehler do in the pitching lab that was established by Andrew Bailey and Craig Breslow. And as it turns out, very few pitchers on the Red Sox can do much of anything with the pitching lab as was constructed at the beginning of the season. So I'm certainly disappointed where they ended up at this point. And I also noticed, John, that I think Red Sox fan fatigue is hitting earlier and earlier every year as you get these mediocre ball clubs that are rolled out year over year, where if you were willing to give this team until the All-Star break last year, you see a lot of people that are kind of jumping ship a week, if not multiple weeks earlier, because, well, I've kind of seen this movie before.
Yeah, and we saw in 2023 they were in that wild card hunt in August and they fell off. And we saw last year 10 games above 500, the All-Star break, in a wild card spot, fell off. And I think it has brought about a level of apathy among some fans, especially casual fans, who maybe were really excited early in the year, right? Like I said, Crochet, Bregman, and then you come out and you win opening day in Texas, but then you kind of scuffle after that, and you haven't really fully found your footing ever since. And then you trade Devers, and I think there's a lot of people who just look at it and say, you have to prove it to me if you're the Red Sox. You have to actually make the playoffs. You have to be in a playoff race in mid-September for me to fully invest. And I understand that. Like, really, from a fan perspective, I'm going to watch them anyway because I'm a big Red Sox fan.
Sure.
But I get the casual fan and even the true Red Sox fan that, you know, in year four of this is frustrated enough that they say, hey, talk to me on September 5th when they're still in the wild card hunt.
And you notice it when you go to Fenway Park nowadays.
Yeah.
And I was there on Tuesday.
I was there Wednesday.
For three. Right, right. For three. Oh, by the way, quick aside, can you quickly recap what you did on Wednesday? Because I got to see you on Wednesday unexpectedly with what you and your dad did. I don't know if you told the story yesterday.
No, but I haven't. So cool story. My dad was at Game 6 of the 1975 World Series. So
right.
Great memory for him and his dad. And then now the Reds are in town, 50th anniversary. The Red Sox spent a couple days celebrating that team. So we got tickets to the game on Wednesday night. In the same section, we think they were the exact same seats.
Are you kidding
that me? My dad sat in with his dad. We couldn't confirm that they were the exact same seats,
yeah.
But he said the view was the same. He knew it was the same section, and he said the view looked identical, so we think they were actually the exact same seats.
Wow.
Yeah. It was
that
a great
part
moment.
I did not know.
Yeah, it was a great moment for us, and we got the replica jersey, too.
Nice.
My dad was all excited for that.
Wow.
So it was cool. And, of course, then we get to see the Red Sox lose 8-4.
Of course.
But actually, it's funny. I bring that game up to say that, and it was a great, great night with my dad, and it was a great moment for him, too.
Right.
And I brought that up, though, because to your point, the Red Sox are up 3-0 in that game, and as soon as Encarnacion Strand hit that grand slam, there was a lot of Red Sox fans around us. Even before that, when they loaded the bases, it was just this, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going to happen. And there was that kind of ingrained belief that they'll either give up a grand slam or they'll give up a two-run double and then another hit. And lo and behold, you get a grand slam. And then the next inning when Romy Gonzalez gets thrown out at third, I saw people around me starting to get ready to leave.
Yeah.
Because there's just this, again, this here, we see it time after time after time.
And this isn't a fan overreaction either. This is something that Alex Cora has said that he says to Ramon Vasquez in one-run games. Oh, my God, here we go again.
Yeah.
He has been on record saying that to the media about his conversations with his bench coach. So the point that came up there on Tuesday as well was somebody who I was with at the game, I've been to a couple games with them, and they said, wow, I feel like every time that I'm at a game with you, there are more opposed. I hear more opposing fans than I do Red Sox fans.
Been a problem since 2022,
and that's roughly when this person moved to Boston. I was still in New York, but we'd go to a game or two a summer and saw one against the Mets. More Mets fans than Red Sox fans. Toronto, who always travels extremely well. More Blue Jays fans. Yankees. We were out in right field, kind of where the visiting tickets were, but you could hear them barking all night long for that wild series in I think it was August of last year. So. It's a fascinating set of circumstances for the Red Sox, for sure. Lastly, the Bruins, and there's plenty more of the current-day Bruins that we'll get to in just a couple of moments here on WEEI Afternoons, but you teased something when we were discussing this during the break. Is it fair to say that the biggest story about the Boston Bruins in the first 6 months of this year is somebody who no longer plays for the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, it was Brad Marchand winning the Stanley Cup. Like, that was the biggest story, and this is something—the Bruins— We can say, like, the biggest part of their identity is coming up short, and it has been for most of the last 50 years. I love the Bruins, but that's just the way it's been. They've won one cup in 50 years.
Yep.
They've had a bunch of heartbreaking losses, but they very rarely, Dan, sucked. Like, they made the playoffs for 30 straight years, and then they missed I think it was like they had the lockout year and they missed the playoffs the next year, and then they were back in the playoffs. They win a cup in 11. They've been to two cups since then. They've always been a playoff team, even 2023, right? One of the most disappointing endings I've ever seen to a season, that record-setting regular season that ends in the first round loss.
Yeah.
They didn't suck, right? Like, it's been rare for them to truly suck. And this year, they were awful. We're talking about the second worst team in the Eastern Conference this year. They were awful. They fired their head coach. Then they didn't keep the interim one around, right? They bring in Sturm. They sell at the deadline, which, again, rare for them to truly sell at the deadline. And so the biggest story ended up being a guy they sold in Brad Marchand winning the cup. And I'm happy for him that he won the cup. I am.
Yes.
But, yeah, it was a weird place, and I feel much worse about the Bruins now than I did in January. And I didn't feel good about him in January. I feel even worse now.
I do as well, but this may be a little overly optimistic. I actually, part of me felt good about the last 6 months with the Bruins because I felt like they finally just accepted what they were.
Okay, that I'll get. You know what? That's a good point, and I'll give you that.
They finally accepted, hey, the window's closed. We're not going to win as currently constructed. Our veterans have already aged out. The core big bad Bruins have, save for Marchand, have already aged out. It's time to embrace the Pastrnak, Swayman, McAvoy-led group of the future. Whether you believe in it or not is kind of secondary to all of that. But the one thing that I will give them credit for is they committed to selling at the deadline, and they did. They seem to commit to not tanking, but certainly not being a good team, and they damn well did that in 2025. And they got a top 10 pick. They used it wisely. They got the best player that was available, and that's why their performance in free agency drives me up a wall. And we're going to talk about their free agency on the other side as we get into hour number three, the 4 o'clock hour, here on WEEI Afternoons.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.